So, let's recap what we discussed during the first 25 Prokem of Tanya. The Baal Tanya set out from the outset, as he explained on the Sharblat, of explaining the Pasuk, Ki kore v'dacha davar ma'oid, b'ficha u'b'lvav chalasayisa, that this matter, referring to Torah and Mitzvahs, is exceedingly close to you, in your mouth and in your heart to do it. So the simple kasha that he's coming to address is, b'ficha, we can understand that a person has command over what they say. La'soysoy, a person has control over what they do. Aber Rebbeinu Shalaylam, b'levavcha, it's karev, elecha, ha'davah ma'ayid, b'levavcha, to change what we want, to change what we desire, that seems so unbelievably difficult. So that's what he says in the Sharblat. He's coming to address in this method of the Torah of Hashem how we are to accomplish that. So in the first 18 Prokem, and he uses the outline of the setting out to explain the Madregis, the different levels of the Tzaddik on one extreme, the Rasha in the other extreme, and the Beinoni in the middle. And he uses a very radical explanation as to what those terms mean. And by doing so, he's launching into this hesber of how it's going to be, b'ficha u'b'lvav chalasayisa. Now, we need to understand what one has to do with the other. It doesn't seem like there's any connection between, okay, now that we understand what the tzaddik and the beinoni and the rasha is, what does that have to do with us? So, in order to understand this, he launches into a description of the fact that every Jew has within himself two mamish, not just like what we refer to generally, or the Gemara refers to as a Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara, which kind of suggests that we have leanings, we have an inclination towards good, or an inclination towards evil, but rather we mamish have two nefashas, we have two total drives, nefasha, neshamois, ani asisi, that mamish, as if there were like two individuals inside of us, and as he describes them, the two kings, each one of them wanting full control of the city. And that the distinction between the tzaddik and the rasha and the beinoni isn't in essence of what we have within us, but how much control each of these nefashas has within us, not absolutely, but within any given time frame. Okay, so that you could have a person who, one moment the person's a rasha, and the next moment they could be a beinoni. Tzaddik is a very high madrega, and he describes them as follows. A rasha is a person who either in thought, in speech, or in action, actually carries out a violation of Hashem's will. The tzaddik, the extreme tzaddik, is a tzaddik who doesn't even have any interest, who, bichlal, he has totally eradicated his nefesh habahami and all of its interests to the point where only nefesh aliki is alive and only its desires and interests even rise to the conscious level of the tzaddik. The beinoni is a person who has both desires, essentially, but he doesn't allow them to be carried out in thought, speech, or in deed. So he has, his nefesh habahami is alive and well, but as far as carrying out any one of its designs, that's not going to happen. So the truth of the matter is that if you were to analyze the way he describes it here, the difference between the tzaddik, the greatest tzaddik, and the worst rasha is not that in hardware that they have anything different. It's quite the contrary. In hardware, they both have the identical drives. It's only with how alive, how real is the nefesh aliki, and how real is the nefesh habahami. In the rasha, he's allowed the nefesh habahami to rule, And in the Tzadik Gomer, he's allowed only the Nefesh HaLiki to rule. Now, there's a certain amount of now, let's talk for a moment about how he talked to us about how does the Beinoni arrive at that level where he's able to actualize his nefesh HaLiki to such a degree. So he goes through several prokim of the fact that Avodas Hashem has to take place both b'dechilu v'rechimu, with passion, with love, with awe, and that if a person contemplates Godless HaBayir, they can bring themselves to that kind of awe, that kind of love. And then he further says, but that we shouldn't be worried about it, because even if a person can't actively bring themselves to that kind of love and awe, even if they can intellectually bring themselves there, that too is considered by the Ribbono Shel Olam as if it accomplishes the same goal of active emotional love and emotional awe. Okay, so that's really what he describes up to Perek Yud Ches, and that therefore he comes to the conclusion that it is Karev Elecha Dover Ma'od Beficho V'Lavav Cholasei Soi, because the main emphasis is on the Beficho and the Lasei Soi. You're going to ask about the Levavcha. The Levavcha is considered as if the person has the true emotional fear and the true emotional love. Okay, because if we put forth the effort and our souls are just not muksha for it, we're not held responsible for that. But in Perek Yud Ches, he now launches into, from Yud Ches to Chof Hei, he launches into a new level of understanding this. And that's as follows. In Perek Yud Ches, the Baal Tanya writes that there's something, and it's interesting because we have a very Ramatul that talks about this a lot in Peliyoitz, about the Ahava Misoteris. Ramatul's main feature in Peliyoitz is that the purpose of davening is to reveal the concealed love that exists in every Jew. This Ahava Misoteris. Okay, and I looked around, this Ahava Misoteris is a concept that's really only brought in the Torah here of the Baal Tanya. It's a very Chabad concept. So he writes that this Ahava Misoteris is a Yerusha from our Avos. Now, there are certain things that we know parents can bequeath to their children, and there are certain things that you can't. And traditionally, a person who's a Baal Chesed will have children who are Baal Chesed. That certainly is a midah that we can give over to our children. But as far as who we can give the Chesed to, meaning, as far as who the subject of our Chesed is going to be, that's not necessarily something that we have any control over. We can't give over to our children just because the father loved a certain person. True, the children may be loving people, but that's not going to say who they're going to love. The same is true with hatred. If a person is stingy, if a person is hateful, chances are that that's the way their children are going to be. But as far as who they're going to hate, that's not controllable through the concept of Yerusha. If that's the case, how do we come along and say that the Ovos were moirish to their children, that we should have a Ahava Misoteris to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Comes the Baal Tanya and says that the reason for this is because Ha'Avos Hein Hein HaMerkava, language of the Zohar HaKadosh, it says that the love that the Avos had wasn't just a love like all other loves, but it was a love that was a total bittul. It was a total definition that the Avos, the love that the Avos had, wasn't a davar noisef, as we call it, something in addition. I'm a good person, I'm a charitable person, I'm a thoughtful person, and I'm also Baal Chesed. The love that the Avos had for the Ribbono Shel Olam was so absolute that it became so part of themselves that the language used about that love is Ha'Avos Hein Hein HaMerkava, and as a result, just like a father is able to be meirish to his children genetic material, so too were the Ovis able to be meirish to their children e'ahava misateres, a love that is genetic to the Jew. So we are, in this regard, we are categorically different than the Ummah Islam and the nations of the world. A non-Jew can bring himself intellectually to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and emotionally to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the love that a Jew has is genetic. And it's genetic because the Oveis were a Mekava, and because of that total negation of any agenda of self, and to be totally botel mevutel to the Ratzon HaBorei, that gave them the ability to give over that Ahava Misateres to Klal Yisrael Ad Sof Kol HaDeiros. Now, this, by the way, we'll see later on in the Torah of the Baal Tanya, is the reason for Ahava Yisrael. One of the reasons that there's an absolute love for every Jew is because even if a Jew is not necessarily at that moment living the love, that love still exists in them, and it's part and parcel of who they are. Now, in Perek Yutes, he then launches the concept of Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. And he says that the Teva of Eish, that the Teva of every flame, is that it wants to join the source of fire, he quotes this from the Arizal, that exists beneath the Galgal HaYireach, even though the fire, the flame knows that the minute it enters and joins that flame, that it's totally lost its own identity. And it will not be able to illuminate. It won't be able to do anything. It won't be able to accomplish anything. Nonetheless, that is the Teva of Eish. And so too, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, the nature of the Neshama is that it wants to be rejoined with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though it knows that the moment that it's rejoined with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it has a total loss of identity. It's become rejoined with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it can't accomplish anything, and it has no identity of its own. Now, going back to the first 18 parakim of Tanya, where he discussed how a Jew intellectually should come to love and to fear, so there's a concept of kirbas elikim litoiv. It's good for me to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It makes sense. It's logical. I should love, I should fear. From Perek Yitches to Perek Chafei, there's a whole new approach, and that is not I should love, I should fear. I should cease to exist. Just like the Ovais were a Merkava, which meant that they had no identity. Their only identity was to do the Ratzon Hashem, and they were Meirish that Koyach to us, so too a Jew has it within themselves to totally lose themselves and their identity to the Ratzon Hashem. And not just that we have that ability, but that is the essential definition of a Jew, is that that's who we are, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. And he quotes from the Rav Yosef Yaivitz, the Achosid Yaivitz, during the Spanish Inquisition, the simplest of Jews went to their deaths rather than to convert to Christianity, even though intellectually, if a person makes a calculation, it makes no sense. I can accomplish much more if I'll act like I converted and then go back and feel zech with my Yiddishkeit. But no, because that destroys the definition of the Jew. The definition of the Jew is to be batal to the Ratzon Hashem, even if it means a total cessation of life. He then goes on, what we learned last week, is to say that this cheshbon that a Jew has, that he never wants to be severed from the Ratzon Hashem, and that is essential to the Jew, is the pshat in Ki Karev Elecha HaDavar Me'od. It is b'ficho b'lvav chalasaisi. That is the only true desire of a Yid, is to be always connected to the Ratzon Hashem. And therefore, it doesn't take any calculation for the Jew to realize that he should be Meisa Nefesh and give his life up when he's confronted with severing his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the case of Avodah Zarah. But he concluded in the last parak that we had, a parak of Hey, that this cheshbon is a cheshbon that we should be using all the time. That we should use this logic to say to ourselves, if I was, chas v'shalom, threatened with death, would I not give my life rather than bow down to this idol, even though it's a total external act, even though I don't mean it, even though the moment after I finish it, I'm going to go back to being connected to the Ratzon Hashem? Now, how much more so a person should make a kal v'chomer when it comes to any chet that they should be able to say, if I would give my life for it, for sure, I should be able to restrain myself, because the whatever pain and misery that exists in not violating the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in any Aveira, it's far less than the pain of death, and I would go to my death rather than to separate myself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he ultimately says that the Ruach Shtus, Ein Adam Chaitel, and Kenef Nefzai Ruach Shtus, the nature of that Ruach Shtus is the rationalization that we make, which says that, no, this Aveira is different. That's Aveira Zora. But this Aveira is different. And he says that that is Mamash Ruach Shtus, because at any moment that a person is violating the Rotzen Hashem, they are completely severed from Hashem. And we had in the program earlier, we talked about the fact that a person who is in violation of the Rotzen Hashem is worse than the Sitra Achra itself, because the Sitra Achra itself is doing the Rotzen Hashem, whereas the Jew who violates the Rotzen Hashem is like taking the face of the king and stuffing it into a kli full of tzoya. So the person has to use this imagery in order to come to a point where it is b'ficha u'b'lvav chalasayse. It's karev edach adavar ma'id. It's karev edach adavar ma'id because it is the nature of the Jew. It is part and parcel of who we are. It's a self, it's a definition of who we are. We are the chelik alikai mimal. That's who we are. Everything else is over and above. So from Perek Aleph to Perek Yud Ches, the Baal Tanya taught us, gave us the tools of how to come to an intellectual relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and thereby at times come to an emotional love and an emotional fear, and to raise up the consciousness of the Nefesh HaLiki over the consciousness of the Nefesh HaBahami. In Perek Yud Ches to Perek Chof Hei, Baal Tanya teaches us that it's karev elecha davar mi'od, because we have the ability and the responsibility to overpower any rationalization with the supreme understanding that I am a chelik elikai. And as a chelik elikai, I have the ability of total self-negation to the Ratzon Hashem, and it is my definition. And he concluded by saying, for this reason, the Rebbe Shlom gave us a mitzvah of saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, because that conjures up the images of Mesiras Nefesh, and it becomes the catalyst that allows us to be mezgaber over the evil within us and to raise up the consciousness of the Chelik of the Kai over any form of Ra that might attempt to distract us from our true purpose in this world.